Thank you.
Hey everyone, I'm Gabrielle. I'm alcoholic and addict. I want to start by congratulating all the newcomers. I'm so happy that you're here. Stay here and keep coming back. And then to all the birthday takers, it's just so great to hear everybody. And we're all a part of the same tribe, and we all go through similar things, even with different backgrounds and everything. So, congratulations to the birthday takers. And I'd also like to thank you so much for my time as secretary here the past 6 months. It has truly been a blessing in my life, and I'm so grateful for the experience. And yeah, it's incredible what this program has done for me and my family. So, my story, I guess it starts in Michigan, in the suburbs of Detroit, where I grew up. I grew up on a small farm. And it was, a pretty carefree upbringing. I felt very overprotected. My parents were very religious. I was brought up in Catholicism. And I had like a lot of people in my family, not so much like my parents' generation, but the generation before them, and they were very heavy drinkers. So a lot of them passed away early when I was young, and there was always like the scene of like alcohol like being around, right? So I think when oh yeah, my parents, so they were very overprotective, especially my mom. And I was supposed to do everything a certain way. And I'm the youngest of six, so right out of high school, I'm talking about my dad now. Right after my dad graduated high school, he had four kids immediately. And so I have four older siblings, half siblings that are much older than me. And then I have an older full-blooded sister that's from my mom and I. My parents have been married now, I think it's 45 years, something really long like that. And yeah, so I have a ton of nieces and nephews. It's just like a little bit about myself. And I think I have 17 now. I'm a great aunt, like three times over. And yeah, it's a big family, and it was something that I felt like I was so like embellished within my family that when I had the chance to like get away, I did. I wanted to experience life on my own. And so when I was like 12, probably, I started experimenting with alcohol. And I just thought it was the way to go. It's what you do. You drink, you get drunk, you have fun. And so yeah, I started stealing liquor from my parents' cabinet. I was quite a little like hellion. They ended up like putting locks on the cabinets, and I was like a master like locksmith. So I got into whatever I needed to get to. I'd have friends over. Then my parents, they built a house on this island. It's called Mackinac Island. And so they would like to go up there for the weekends. So my older sister and I would have the house alone on the weekends. So then I started, inviting people over and just getting drunk. And then they would bring alcohol. And yeah, it was fun at that time, but I was definitely abusing alcohol. I can remember. I never liked the taste of it, but if I drank, I wanted to get drunk. So that was like what was influencing me. So from like media, I don't want to say social media because it was like just on the brink of existence at that point. So yeah, I started drinking, sneaking around from my parents. I was in private schooling my whole life. I wasn't like in a uniform, so I just felt so constrained. Like when I was growing up, it was like the era of Britney Spears and her song "Overprotected" came out, and I was like so obsessed with that song and the music video. If you know, you know. And so like I had like her and like Lindsay Lohan and Paris Hilton as like my role models, and they were just thoughts. doing the most, in the early 2000s. And I was like, yes, this is like what I'm supposed to do. So, like, this is life, So, That's what I was modeling my life after, just having as much fun as I can, just being wild. It is my last name. So yeah, it was fun at first, but at the same time, like I didn't know how to drink as none of us do. I was like, I would get so sick and it was awful, but I never wanted to do drugs until I went to college. So I slipped my senior year. I think I smoked weed. But that was like, okay, right? So it was like just alcohol for this time. Did I drink and drive in high school? Yes. Did I get blackout drunk? Yes. All that kind of stuff happened. And then I went to college, and one of my friends got their wisdom teeth out, and we were at like a game, and he was like, "Oh, I have this Oxy. Do you want to try?" And I was like, sure. I took it. I didn't feel anything. So I'm just like, okay, this is nothing. But then he kept on having it. So I tried it some more. And it was Roxy. It was really I'm romanticizing it, but it was my true love at that time in my life. So I became my main addiction was to opiates. And I cannot drink normally. I know that I have alcoholism in my family. But I never liked drinking the way I liked using Oxy. And then it was too strong on my system to mix both. So in college, I started actually using Adderall without a prescription in high school because I was like, okay, all this kind of stuff. So I started using Adderall heavily. So I was on uppers and downers. I tried Xanax and I would just fall asleep. I didn't like it. Thank God it didn't work for me. I did try cocaine a couple times. I was allergic. So thank God for that. Someone just told me it was bad. But bad cocaine. But yeah, it wasn't, I just was prioritizing all the wrong things in my life. And from there is when. Like in college is when I was like, okay, I want to distance myself from my family. I was like too involved with them. And, I just wanted my own space and stuff. So I started like going homeless. And that's interesting. It sounds like homeless, but I just started going homeless. And, just like not returning calls and I just didn't want anything to do with my family. And while I went to school and I was like I was an undergrad, I'm like, I'm only doing this like for my family. My mom really wanted me to graduate. So I was like, okay, but that like was not my main focus or priority at all. But I still had relatively good grades because I did what I needed to do, but I can remember like just being sick to class, like going up the stairs and like being like dope sick and like having to leave because I didn't even make it to class. And then I also started working when I was 15. So that was like I really like it's just a little bit about me, I guess. I like always wanted to be a model. I always wanted to be super tall. Like, like 5'10" and be like a runway model, but I was not tall enough to do that. But so my mom, we would like go to Chicago and I get like scouted for my first agency that I was with. And so I started working at 15, doing mostly like commercial acting and modeling out of Michigan, well, out of Chicago and then Michigan and stuff. And I did that for a while, but then I ended up getting so sick. There was a film incentive going on when in Michigan when I was an undergrad, and so we had like a lot of big movies coming to town. So I was like on all the sets for them. They booked all the speaking roles out of LA and New York, so I didn't have any speaking roles, but it was like cool to like still be a part of it. And I can remember I was like cast for it was like something, and then I can remember I was on so many opiates at that point. I think I was like a freshman in college, and I had a kidney infection because I was doing so many opiates, and I didn't know. I just had this pain. I was in like this flight attendant like outfit on set, like And I can just remember being so sick and going to the hospital like afterwards. Oh yeah, it was like a 95 degrees like day and in this wool outfit and just being so sick. And I realized that like getting high and like going out late like really wasn't working for me anymore. So yeah, I was hospitalized. I had this like kidney infection. I was really unhealthy. This is like kind of a secret I don't like to tell, but in undergrad, like I was in Michigan. We didn't have like the food options that we have like out here. I like ate so much McDonald's. I think that was like another reason why I was hospitalized, because that's like I ate that every day. Yeah, and I would go with my look, like calling it homeless chic. I'd like go in a robe in my car. It was like right down the street from my school. And yeah, it was what it was. Just like not being the human being that, I really wanted to be, that drugs and alcohol was like turning me into. So, and then I was just starting to not show up for life. So I got myself out of like all priorities I have besides like work. That was like the only thing I wanted to do. And I went to class sometimes. So then I can remember like getting so sick on my way to a set, and it was like probably an hour away. I had to pull over in a gas station and lay down on the floor there because of the bathroom, because I was so sick. I had my agent calling me up and everything for like, I was probably on the ground for 2 hours just because I wasn't able to move. It's like when you're on something and it doesn't work anymore, and it's like you're like crap because you have to take stuff to be normal. But then when that stops working, it's like the physical withdrawals and just the overall sickness that I was having. It was really, really hurtful. And, I ended up severing a lot of relationships that way. Because I wasn't reliable, I wasn't showing up, and just stuff like that. And then it just got to the point where it was just like kind of really not fun anymore. And I really just felt like I had a monkey on my back. I was like lost everyone in my life, basically. Towards the end of my using, I had become basically mute besides like three people. It was like my parents and my boyfriend before I got sober. And I was so closed off in my drug dealer. So I never wanted to get a prescription for everything. I like never wanted to have easy access or have it be on my record or anything like that. And it's so stupid because it's like, look, now I've like gone to treatment and everything. It's like there. But I did get arrested. Well, I don't want to say I got arrested, but I was definitely like in the back of a police car a few times. I was able to get my way out of it. I was relatively smart with the law, with knowing it. But just I did stupid things and was put in stupid situations that I put myself in. I had to take responsibility, as we do as alcoholics, for the demise that our lives are in, typically when we walk in, the doors to AA. So I was at the point where I was like about to die. I started going to like a really shady place near Detroit and to pick up drugs. And I knew that I looked so awful, and that was like one of the things that killed me was I looked like a crackhead. I feel like I was probably like 90 pounds, and it just was not good. And my skin was getting all like busted, and I was like, "What's going on?" I didn't know what to do, and I couldn't like wake up. I couldn't show up. So I had a really hard time. Thank God I have great parents. I had to like have an intervention with my parents. They knew something was going on. They didn't know what. And my daddy thought I was an angel. Like I would never do anything like that. And then my mom, she knew something was going on, but she didn't know what. So eventually, like I sat them down. I was like, "Hey, I need help because I was on the verge of dying." I know I was. Like it was so creepy when you think about it. When I think about it, I was like sleeping at night towards the end, just being like so high with my arms up in the air. And then it's like I found out like people like do that like near end of death and stuff, like they reach out to like their loved ones, and I started doing that, and it's like creepy to even like talk about. But yeah, it's like I just knew I could feel my soul was dead. I was like the walking dead. I knew that. So yeah, I needed some help and I had no idea what to do. So I went to my parents and they were like, you need to go under treatment. And I was like, okay. So I went and it was called Brighton Hospital at the time. It's in Michigan. And so I went into treatment. I was there for 17 days. They were trying to tell me I was so sick. Oh my God, it was awful. I was so scared because like my whole reality was turning upside down. I was learning about AA. I was learning about what life without drugs looks like now. And I had no idea how to be sober, how to feel my feelings, how to go through life, basically. And so then they were trying to convince me at the time, it was called a halfway house, to go to the women's halfway house on the campus. And I was like, I do not want to go to a halfway house. So I went there for like an hour. I called my dad. He came and picked me up immediately. Within 24 hours, I had pills and I was snorting pills again. So I was out for 2 weeks. But here's the thing, it's like when you have the program and when you have a little bit of sobriety, it totally ruins. You're drunk, you're high, whatever it is. So I was like, oh, this is awful. It's even worse than before. It's like not even a baseline. It's like you start off right where you left off, but it's like worse because you have AA in the mind. So I was like, I don't know what to do. So yeah, I was snorting pills again. It was like a big thing, obviously. And I had to wait a week for a bed to get back in. So then I went back into treatment for about 2.5 months. And so I went into rehab and then I stayed at the women's halfway house. And honestly, that is what saved my life. It was so hard for me to let go of my ties, to delete my drug dealer's numbers, and to just let go of the strong addiction I had. I had a dependency on this to live. Like I couldn't go through a day without it. Like towards the end, it was. I can just remember it was so hard. It was like always around 3 o'clock, I would be fine. That 3 o'clock is also the time my drug dealer was waking up. So it was like, okay. So I wouldn't buy a lot, but I'd buy some. And it was always around 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. So I was like, okay, I can't take it anymore. And that's when I'd go and pick up. So like that time was always like hard for me in the beginning of sobriety because it's like we have our patterns. So it's like learning to release that, which was really hard for me to do. It was like changing my way of thinking, rewiring my brain, and just accepting where I am and being honest. So one of the first things that I did was get a sponsor. And I'm so grateful for my first sponsor, Dawn. She's incredible. She lives in Michigan and she was just like a badass woman. And I knew she wasn't gonna put up with my shit. And I like that she's going to hold me accountable. And so yeah, we started working the steps and I went through the steps in probably a couple months. Probably it was like 2.5 months at that time. My sobriety date is December 5th, 2015. So I have 9 years now. So this is 9 years ago. And thank you. And so she held me accountable. I went through the steps. It was really great for me because I had no idea what the steps were. And I was so like disillusioned because I was like, what is life? You know what I mean? Without drugs. So yeah, I dove in. I just dove in. I started reading. I learned what meditation was. I learned what being healthy was, like eating better and like treating myself better and being honest and being surrounded by people who were all working towards a common goal. So yeah, that was really, really incredible. And I went through the steps, but it was like really, really hard for me. I had amends to make with my parents and everything. And here's the thing about sobriety now that I'm in sobriety and it's the journey. Like sobriety is like not perfect. Like everyone has their own version of it and you know, twists and turns that we get to like be here today. And I'm so grateful for where I am today. So, in sobriety, you know, I'm working the steps. I'm going to meetings. I'm like, oh my gosh, what do I do? I had no idea what to do. So I wanted to get more business experience because I had no like real world life experience. I feel like my parents were so protective, like they basically did everything for me growing up. And then it's like the industry I was in, I needed to move industries. So then I started like working in the mortgage industry. Like, what do you do when you get sober? It's like, okay, let's try something new. So yeah, I started learning that. It was a complete change, but I surrendered and I was willing to do basically whatever it took because that's how it was about using. I was like a great addict, and drinker. Like if I wanted it, I was gonna get it. So that's how I started looking at my sobriety. When I was able to turn my will and my life over to a power higher than myself, that's what really restored the peace within my mind because I had so much mental turmoil about things and I didn't know, and so much shame. And like I still have had shame for years into my sobriety. I feel like I mostly have released it within the past like 2 years. But I had a lot of shame and guilt around that has continued. It continued on past the original time that I worked the steps. So then I'm sober. I'm changing the way I'm doing things. I change everything about my life. I changed my surroundings. Even though I didn't have a lot of people to cut out, like the people that I was still in contact with, I knew they weren't good influences. So that was probably one of the other hardest things to do was to like let go of the people that I knew were ultimately going to like encourage me to use or to not like live a life the way that I wanted to be living. So I started getting sober. I started working the program. And it really changed everything for me. But here's the thing: I was 6 months sober. I get emotional about it, but it's okay. And then I met someone, and I was like, oh my God, I made this person my higher power. I didn't know it at the time, but it's like we go through stages in life, and I'm not going to cry, but yeah, it's challenging. So then I started having all these like incredible things like start happening to me, and it was like on my birthday, right? So I was really working towards like bettering myself, living a way of life that I'm proud of, being closer to my family, keeping my priorities like in check, right? So, but then it's like I had this, I don't know what it was. It was like something that came over me. And I met someone that was like started showing me all this stuff that I had like never seen before. And yeah, like just incredible things just started happening. And I thought it was, yeah, I guess it's kind of hard to for me to explain, but I attributed them to, like all these like monumental things that I thought would never happen to me started happening, and it was always on my birthday, my sobriety birthday. So like I can remember like 2 years like sober. I ended up flying over the recovery center I was in like in a helicopter, and I was like, oh, this would only happen if I was sober, right? Like just freak circumstance, stuff like this like started happening. And then 4 years sober, I was invited to a party at the White House. I was like, how does an addict get invited to a party at the White House? So I went to that, and then I started not being as involved in the program as much as I wanted to because I was with this person who ultimately I knew like wasn't right for me, but I was having like not only so much fun, but did have a genuine connection, but ultimately it wasn't right. And this person encouraged me not to drink, And I liked that. So he was Muslim, and I realized I ended up being like friends with a bunch of Muslims because who I adore. They're such amazing people. I was raised Catholic, but they typically don't drink. So I like if I wasn't like going to AA every day, I was around people that weren't necessarily drinking or didn't encourage me to drink. So it was interesting. So then all these like crazy things started happening to me, and I started making this person my higher power instead of, what the program had taught me. And so long story short, like things were going great for a while. I ended up moving to DC. It was exciting. I had a great job that I ended up leaving because I wanted to move out here to LA. And so I moved out here 3 years ago. I spent about 2.5 years in DC, and it was an incredible experience. My time in AA there was mostly virtual. It was during the pandemic, and it was very, it was during the pandemic, not all the time, but most of the time. So a lot of my meetings were from Michigan or, just kind of all over the country. So, because they were virtual, so that was cool. But I didn't like have a great in-person home group during that time. I went to a few AA meetings, but I had so much shame around letting people know that I worked with that, hey, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was so private about that. I had so much shame around it because, for whatever reason, like I thought people would use it against me or look down on me. What I realized in sobriety is that people respect me more because I don't drink and I don't use typically. And if they don't, it's like that's not the company I want to be around regardless. So it's like when I realized when I'm able, I felt like I was living in early sobriety because I didn't know how to live, still I was still learning that, I didn't want people to know who I was except for the people in the program and the people that I was like truly, truly close with. So it's like I built up these walls, and I became so like manipulative and was very calculated about all my moves that I did for a while instead of letting like God work through me. And letting the universe like do its thing. So, and what I have noticed is when I don't have my own agenda, life is so much better. When I just like live through God, I don't even know what I want. I still don't. I just want what I do know is that I want whatever God has in store for me, whether that's good or that's bad, because ultimately I know God has my back, and I'm grateful for that. So all these things started happening to me, but I felt like I wasn't truly being like my authentic self. Like I had on like my armor, to like deal with the real world outside of AA and outside of my immediate family. So, I lived my life a certain way where I was like suited up every day. I really am an artist at heart. I didn't really let that show that much at all. And so I was just living in a way, and ultimately, like I became just so disconnected from myself. I was so far on the other side. Although I wasn't drinking and although I wasn't using, that's what happened. And so then I came back to then I came to Michigan, or I'm sorry, to California, and I've been here for 3 years now. And I have to say that the recovery community out here has just saved my life. I was in that situation where it went on for years with that person and I didn't know how to release it. And so I needed a sponsor, an AA out here that was like really going to help me. Of course, I have my family, but at the same time, I just felt like you need someone else that's like, a sponsor. You guys know what a sponsor is. Someone that was here, and I found the most incredible sponsor, another badass woman that I knew would like, this might not be very AA, but would be able to chew that person up and spit them out, like meaning like I needed help like dealing with moving on from people, and like I had such a grip and hold on my life. And we started working through the steps again out here, and it's just been incredible. It's like just letting my guard down more and being honest. It's like I would not open up to people, and it was like, you know, it was killing me. I was in so much pain, even in sobriety, but it's like that's how sobriety is. It's like we learn how to go through life sober, and you know, there's ups and downs to that. So the last 2 years, not this past year, but the 2 years before that, my first 2 years in LA, they were for sure the hardest in sobriety that I've had. But being honest with myself and those around me, you know, I'm like feel like I'm on the next chapter now, and I'm so incredibly grateful for that. And that comes from working the steps, having an incredible support system out here. You know, I have my sponsor who invited me to this meeting, and she's why I'm at this meeting because I met her at my first AA meeting in LA, and she kept on showing up at that meeting at Unurban in the mornings, and it just really changed my whole life, honestly. And she like told me about this meeting, and now it's like I have a grand sponsor that I love, Terry, and great friends like April that are here, and some others in the crowd that I see you. And I'm just so grateful for just the community, because we can't do it alone. When I distance myself from the pack is when I started getting like picked off, you know. And it's like that's when you realize it's like better to stay in the middle. It's like have service commitments, have a sponsor, have sponsees, and just work the steps and be honest. The biggest thing is like being honest, and it's like not just like once when you're doing your four steps, it's like daily. So it's having like a good like morning routine, a good practice, like making amends when they're due, understanding my character defects and being okay with, you know, the mistakes that I've made and moving forward, and know that if I give this up to God, that I can like everything will be okay. And that's like the main thing is in the program that everything will be okay. And I know that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, just as everyone else in this room. Like we're all brought in this room together. And how's my time? So that's all I have, but thank you. Okay, questions? Monica? My spiritual practice, it looks like meditation. I try to meditate every day. Some months are better than other months when it comes to my daily meditation. But I definitely do that. I pray multiple times a day. If I'm like in a really stressful situation, I say the Serenity Prayer. That always happens. Another spiritual practice is I don't go to church that often, but I go whenever I'm with my family. And even though I don't go all the time, I still appreciate it, and I'm like grateful that I had that, you know, instilled in me when I grew up. And yeah, and I get down on my knees and I pray to God. Honestly, I stay connected to him. Sam? The most impactful amends I've made was to my parents when I first got sober, because I lied so much to them about everything. And I was a liar, as we are in Alcoholics Anonymous. And yeah, it was probably to my parents for just, I know I put my mom through so much pain of her not knowing where I was, for me going MIA for like long periods of time, just not caring. I went like pretty crazy, you know, like especially towards the end of my using, where I was a mess. I was yelling, I would cuss at her, like just really, really awful stuff towards the end. And, so I think making that amends, and yeah, another really impactful amends I had was I was an intensive outpatient right after I left rehab for the first time, and I was going high, and so I made amends to my like director there, or whatever his role was. I made amends to him too, and I can just remember he said no one's ever made amends to him before. So I thought that was like cool because his was my first amends that I did ever. So it was like a safe space and he accepted it and was grateful. Any other questions?
Well, thank you so much for all the wonderful speakers and everything you did. I'm just wondering, did you ever have thoughts of relapse during that difficult time with the fellow and getting out of that relationship?
Did I ever have thoughts of relapse? Yes, I did, because I was put in situations where he ended up starting to use towards the end of it cocaine, and I was like, I cannot be around this. Like, this is where I draw the lines. If you're going to start bringing in like drugs like this around me, like I cannot do that. So yeah, there was times where I thought about it, but ultimately, like, no, I haven't wanted to, but it definitely has crossed my mind. But I'm at the point now, well, I guess where I am now in my sobriety, I don't crave a drink or a drug. I might like want something else, but I'm typically not like craving or feel the need to use. I have the tools now that I know what to do, so I don't drink. So, Lydia?
Alcoholic.
Hi, Lydia.
This is a Zoom question. Juliet on Zoom asked, how do you work 6 and 7?
How do I work 6 and 7? I work 6 and 7 by being honest. And I recently, did a fourth step and a fifth step with my sponsor. Oh, no. You okay? Okay. So by being honest with myself and looking at my character defects and what they are, that has really helped me accept who I am, where I've been, accept other people around me, and acknowledge that I want to change the things, my character defects, but also accepting them. But I humbly ask God to remove them, and just basically my only ask from God is to let me like live your will, whatever that is. And it's like I know it when I know it, and that's typically just doing the next right thing. So that's my 6 and 7. Okay, and that's time. Thank you.